really focus on the pre-work. Think about what goal that you're trying to achieve, what the learning objective is for your audience, and really hone in and get that right. And then write the content in a way that's a little bit more informal and that comes across as a natural human to human interaction.
Thinking about your visuals, what example are you going to show? Is it going to be distracting, or does it go along with the step-by-step that you're trying to show? So doing that prep definitely can save you time and improve the quality of your tutorial.
Get feedback from people, right? So just don't put it out there and hope that it's wonderful. See if there's ways that you can maybe test it with maybe a core group of people in your organization, or maybe have your team look at it. If you follow Andrew and Chandra's tips, the evaluation piece and getting feedback, I think that's the missing piece.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are and wherever you're watching from. I'm Matt Pierce, your host. This is the Visual Lounge, where we talk about using images and videos in the workplace. And today, we're going to be talking about, I'm so excited for this topic, we're going to be talking about not how to make a good video. Anyone can make a good video. That includes you. You can make a good video. We're going to talk about all the ways, maybe not all of them, but most of them, a lot of them. We're going to be talking about the ways you can ruin a good tutorial video or just any video. So we've got a great panel of guests today. I'm just going to flash this up here. You can see their wonderful faces, and we're going to jump right in by introducing them and letting them actually talk and introduce themselves. So welcome to the Visual Lounge, everybody. Kara, Chandra, and Andrew. Andrew, we had you in our pre-stuff. We had you go last, so we'll have you just start with your introductions, and then we'll go to Kara and then to Chandra. So just quick introductions, cool. Everybody.
Yeah, how's it going, everyone? I'm Andrew DeBell. I'm a learning experience strategist at Atlassian. And we focus on product training, so training customers on how to use tools like Jira, Confluence, and Trello. My expertise really blends integrated marketing and learning design, so coming in at that angle, and been making videos for a long time, probably the last 20 years or so. So glad to be here.
Fantastic. Thanks for being here. Kara, how about you?
Hi, everyone. I am Kara North, and I am a learning and development consultant. I have my own consulting firm called The Learning Camel. And I really am focused in not only just learning technologies, but I really care about curriculum design, and video is a big part of that. So I'm really excited to be here.
All right. Thank you, Kara. We're glad you're here too. And excited to get to see you at IRL soon. So yes. All right, Chandra.
Hello, my name's Chandra Owen. I'm an instructional designer at TechSmith. I've been here almost 4 years. Day to day, I create the tutorial videos that you may see on TechSmith's website or sometimes even in product. I'm trying to help customers to be successful with Camtasia, Snagit, Audiate, and the different products here at TechSmith. And I've been doing training communications video for quite a few years. Was in higher ed for a little while before coming over to TechSmith.
All right. And so Chandra's made a ton of videos and she cranks them out like nobody's business. So all right. Well, thank you all for being here, because you're all experts in video. We're gonna get into ruin a good video here in just a second. But before we do that, I've got two questions I'm going to ask each of you. I would love your take. We'll start with the first question. When do you choose to use video? We know there's lots of options out there, right? Like there's lots of mediums we could go to. So what is it that needs to be true for you to say, yep, this is a video? So Kara, let's have you go first this time.
Okay. So I think a couple of use cases that I've kind of used throughout my career. One is I spent a short time of my career in manufacturing. And so with manufacturing, there are a lot of moving pieces and parts, as you can imagine. So one way that we leveraged video was to just demonstrate processes. So the points that I worked at, they loved those Visio chart. And well, those are good and you can reference them. Sometimes it's just helpful to just kind of a little bit more character to it. That way you're able to see and kind of understand how everything kind of fits together. So I'd say you have some kind of a technical process like that. And then probably another one is it's just something that is a very dense topic. So, I mean, it could still be in that technical realm, but just something where if somebody just needs a quick reminder, or if there are a lot of, issues that come up where there's common mistakes, sometimes a video can really help show those and help people avoid them in the future.
All right. Awesome. So I love that. So you got some density of topic and things that maybe need to be a little bit more visual. Andrew, we'll go to you. And Chandra, don't worry, you'll get your turn to go first too. But Andrew, I'm curious, anything you would say different or change about this?
Yeah, I find that video works well for a few different use cases. One is when there are some type of physical skills involved, you know, like you want to see an expert human on screen actually performing a task. I think in at least in as far as digital tools go, video is one of the best ways to be able to do that, because as humans, as we're learning, we want to see, oh, how is the expert actually performing that skill or that task, and what are they doing it, so that we can then practice that exactly as the expert is doing so. So things like, you know, maybe you want to fix something in your house, like put in flooring or learn how to swing a tennis racket or something like that you can actually see an expert doing. I find that video is a very helpful way to learn those types of skills. And the other is real quick is just on software tutorials. So I think that there's a lot of anything that's visual that you need to see visually on screen and then be able to do it on your own screen, be able to map those processes. I find that video is that one of the best mediums to be able to do so.
Yeah, awesome. Well, we are obviously fans of video tutorials at TechSmith. Like, that's what we do all day long. But I love this idea of this expert. Like, this, you know, it makes me think about YouTube and the rise of YouTube as like the second largest search engine out there, and all the things that are happening there. The role of having experts in our lives and the value of seeing that person is pretty powerful. So I love those answers. All right, Chandra, I can't imagine your answer is going to be much different than Andrew's second one, but I'm curious, what do you think for video?
Yeah, for me, it's typically a process that has more than a couple steps. So, you know, if the process is just right clicking and selecting something, I probably wouldn't need a video for that in most cases. But if there's quite a few steps involved, it's nice to be able to visualize and see the context in, especially with software type of videos. The other is, I like to look at the frequently asked questions that are coming into our teams from customers. And if there is a common issue that people aren't following, maybe we thought something was intuitive and found out, you know what, with all these questions, that doesn't look like it is. That might be another time where video could come to the rescue and help.
I love it. Yeah, those frequently asked questions. I actually had a really great conversation just about that yesterday with someone about how valuable having a library of those is. And, you know, just so cool to be able to point people like, oh, we got an answer for that. Just go look it up. Okay. So next question here, and this one's, you know, probably a little bit, we'll keep it to one thing. So what's one tip if you could give the audience any tip about improving using images or video in their work, what tip would you give them? And Chandra, we'll let you have the honor of going first here. Maybe that's harder. I don't know.
No. I've got an idea for you. I would say what I like to do is remove the noise. So if I have either I'm recording my screen, I make sure I turn off my notifications. I try to simplify it as much as possible. We talk about SUI, or simplified user interface. So graphics that where you can take maybe a snapshot or screenshot of your UI, and you can then take it into any photo editing software or Snagit or whatever you like to use and cut out those maybe menus or extra text or things that you don't really need, and then bring that into a video editor and edit from there. So you're removing that extra distraction.
All right. Awesome. What about Kara? We'll go to you, and then we'll go to Andrew, and then we'll take a quick break after that. But
sure. So I think whether you're asked for it or not, go ahead and think about captions and a transcript. You never know, and that will obviously come in handy. To me, I think that's an important part of the development process that so often gets skipped. And there's a lot of great tools that can help you build out captions quickly. I believe Audiate does a great job with that. And then there's other things out there on the market. But even if you are not expected to do it, go ahead and add them in. And there's, you can either burn them in or get it to where it can toggle to turn on or off. But I just think you already have the audio there. You might as well put it together, because it's much easier to do it on the front end than retrofit.
Yeah, love that. Accessibility, it's a big deal. We should do it. We should be better at it. Even if we can't do everything, at least start doing some. All right, Andrew, what about you? What's your tip?
Yeah, my tip actually starts before you even get to any of the video editing or video production side. I think it's most important to do that pre-work and that planning. So starting with like one very simple learning objective of what you think the learner is going to get from this video, I think is the most important and often sometimes just kind of skipped over and started in the production. And then along that, when you're writing the actual script, there's this sense of like the English language where like the written word is very different than the spoken word, right? And I think a lot of times we write scripts in the way that we would read something, but then when that's actually said out loud in a voiceover, it comes across as sort of overly formal. And I actually think it can be a barrier to the learning process. So that's my other tip, that it's writing in a way that's informal, that sounds actually as somebody would naturally be speaking this and actually teaching this to you rather than writing it as it was to be read.
Yeah, I love that. Keep it conversational, keep it natural. I happen to write like I talk, which is not good when you're trying to write something formal. But yeah, I love that tip. Well, thank you all for this great kind of first step here in our conversation. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Sorry for the quick interruption. I just wanted to tell you about two things. One, we'd love to have you subscribe to the show. Go ahead and click the bell if you're on YouTube. If you are on your favorite podcasting app, make sure we're into your feed so you never miss another episode. And two, go check out TechSmith Assets. If you haven't seen TechSmith Assets before, they are so awesome. So many great things in there. Not only can you get stock photos, stock music that you can use royalty-free, there's also images. There are particular assets that work really well in Camtasia and Snagit, stamps and custom intros, lower thirds, all those things to make a really great image or video or presentation. So go ahead again, check out TechSmith Assets. That's at library.techsmith.com, or you can find it through Camtasia and Snagit. Now back to the show. All right, everybody, welcome back. Okay, guest panel, we are so excited. We're gonna talk about ruining a good video. Let's just get right hard hitting here. Number one attribute, that thing you think ruins a good video. Like what's the biggest, your pet peeve? What destroys anything that you thought, oh, that would have been so good, but maybe it's something you've watched, maybe it's something you've done.
I can share my pet peeve. It is, think about when you want to find those recipes and you've got to like scroll through a million scrolls to get to the actual recipe. I feel the same way with tutorial videos when they have way too much, you know, in the intro that I'm just like, come on, just get to it. I just want to learn how to build this table, or I just want to learn this ukulele song. Just get to it. So that's my big pet peeve.
So what I'm hearing you say, Chandra, we should put learning objectives at the beginning of every single video in this video, and it should be like 3 minutes long.
Yeah, please don't do that.
Okay. Other thoughts about this? Is this a pet peeve for everybody?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, Chandra. That's like, I feel like also on YouTube, there's this sense of like, oh, if I make my videos longer, then more people will stay on the videos and stay on YouTube. And then YouTube will favor those videos. But then it ends up being like 7 minutes of like an unnecessary backstory until you get like those last 3 minutes is actually the information that you want. So I think that's like one of the downsides of these social platforms and Google and YouTube and how they're prioritizing content. But if you're thinking about it from a learning perspective, I 100% agree with you. You know, getting straight to that's very specific information. And also along with that, setting a clear title of what the learner is going to learn from this information. I've seen that fairly often where it's this like kind of ambiguous title where you're like, what am I actually going to learn by watching this video? So I always like to just be very straightforward and clear, even just using like how-to language most of the time, right? Like how to do this one thing, right? Because then like before even watching the video, the audience has a very clear understanding of what exactly they're going to learn before they even hit play.
Well, I'll just add to that, Andrew. I think the thing that there's a misnomer out there that first 5 seconds from a YouTube social video perspective matters so much, right? Like if you're not keeping people past 5 seconds, you get like, I don't know the algorithm, but you get dinged. And so like, it's like, yeah, we often think, oh, I'm going to set something up. It's like, no, pull me in, but give me the information right away. So I stick around because that, you know,
right.
You want people to watch, but if I don't think it's valuable and 5 seconds in, I'm out of there. I'm gone.
Right.
All right. Well, let's go to another question. So oftentimes I think, you know, we have these big things, like maybe we do the stories before our content. What's something that you think is small? Like, you know, instead of the big mistakes, what's a small thing that can really just make something, you know, otherwise not good, or make it hard to watch or hard to learn from? Any kind of things that you see people doing out there?
Yeah, I'll start that one. So I think one that is small, but it's something that you can change pretty quickly, is the fact of just kind of knowing who's going to be watching it. So I think often when you are creating these tutorial videos, there is kind of an air of expertise already embedded in as you're making them. So as you're using acronym, as maybe you are referring to something, making sure that you spell it out appropriately and just maybe defining it for people that may or may not be as, I guess, well-versed in the nomenclature of what the topic is. I think that that's a nice, small little change that can really end a video.
Yeah, absolutely. What else?
Well, I have a couple here. One of them, like if we're just talking like software tutorials, since that's a lot of what we make, one of the pet peeves that I have is, you know, if you're recording your screen of some type of software, typically the user interface is very, very small. It's like very, very difficult to read. And so when you record your screen that way and you create a video, it can make it very challenging for somebody to actually learn from it, because they can't see what each piece of it says. So something really simple that we try to do is just zoom in. If it's like a browser-based tool, just zoom in on your browser, you know, to 150% or something like that before you even record any of the screen, so that all those buttons and all the text is just a little bit larger and easier to see.
You know, I particularly, I try not to watch screen tutorials on my phone, but there are times when I'm having okay, how do I do this? You know, and it's like, nope, I cannot see this. It's what is that button? And I should probably be wearing my glasses for it anyway, but who's time for that?
Right. So, right.
Chandra, what about you? What's the thing that just, you know, it's going to ruin a video that you see?
This might be a little nitpicky, and I know that people disagree depending on the level of polish that you want your videos to have. But for me, it's paying attention to what the cursor is doing and trying to be a little bit more smooth with that, or editing it in post-production. So there are times when if a video is like on a hover state and it's flickering off and on, or maybe it's going here and here and here, and you're trying to show me something and I'm really going to focus in on what you're doing with your cursor. So it sometimes doesn't get the attention, I think, that it needs to in tutorials.
Yeah, for sure.
I was just going to add to that, Chandra. I 100% agree. And I think another thing on that, kind of those small things and details, is along with the cursor, there's almost this, we're talking software tutorials, there's almost this like flow, right, of consistency, where you have to match the voiceover and the cursor movement and the clicks. And there's like, what really bothers me is when all those things change with each instruction, right? And it makes it very difficult to follow, instead of following a very consistent pattern of when the mouse moves, when the voiceover happens. And so I think that's another thing of just like getting that consistent pattern down, so that the human learners can actually, you know what to expect for each one of those instructions that's coming up.
Yeah, we don't want those robot learners figuring it out. They're too quick, but
exactly. They'll get there right away.
No, but I think that makes sense, right? Like it speaks to patterns of learning in general. And so if someone's making a video, what are the things that make it so I don't have to keep reprocessing and the understanding, right? Like that seems pretty straightforward, but it feels like that's really hard to do, Andrew, like getting the, I don't know, I've made hundreds of videos and I don't know that I've really thought about that. I probably have things I do because of habit, but not that consistent, like I did this on purpose, more so than I just kind of, oh yeah, that's what I do.
Right. I think if you've made that many videos, which it sounds like you have in the past, it probably just becomes sort of like second nature, and that's how you would think about videos. But I think for those that haven't created a lot of tutorial videos previously, that's one of the big things that I always see. Because I review a lot of these from a lot of the vendor work that we do in partnerships, so I see that quite a lot, that kind of inconsistent, and it creates some challenges to get the information across. Because that's the whole goal, right? What's the easiest way to get this information across the screen to that other person? And when there's any type of barriers like that can be easily removed, I usually flag them to change.
Awesome.
You actually sparked something. Oh, sorry.
No, go, Kara, please.
Talking is, you know, with that, I think it's so good to have like a chapters or just timestamps for people to know of where to go in the view, because we might want them to come back to it and revisit it if they're in the flow of work and maybe need that. It's like, oh, I wish that in the video. I don't quite remember how to do that. So there's a lot of great ways to do that. You know, Text with Camtasia makes it pretty easy with the markers. You can export it to YouTube and it'll automatically do the timestamp chapters, which is great. But if you don't have that, there's other ways to do that. But just thinking about replayability, people coming back to it, and making it easier for them to find that nugget.
So, Kara, I promise this will all tie together, but a TechSmith study that we did called the Video Reviewer Study actually talks about the number one reason people stop watching videos is they got the information they needed, which means that probably they're going to want to come back and get the information. If you can make that easy for them or they can point to their colleagues, that's just a benefit. The other thing that video study talks about is another, maybe a pet peeve that we all have, is audio. What's your views on, you know, audio? Because particularly in this world where we live, where, you know, a lot of people are remote, it used to be, you know, we're not all in the office. We don't always have the home setup gear that I have, which is, you know, a 4K camera, right. So not everybody has that. So from your perspective, from how important to you, all of you, is audio to your video outcomes?
Well, I'm not a great example at the moment. My Yeti mic is at the doctor's right now. So I only had my earbuds here and my mic, which do an okay job, but, you know, probably isn't the top thing I would choose if I'm recording a professional tutorial. So yeah, I've learned a lot with audio, you know, having a good mic, doing a test. Nothing's more frustrating than reading through a full script or recording and then playing it back and finding out that there's some sort of noise or interference, or you didn't, you know, turn on to record with the correct microphone, you know, all those things that can happen. So yeah, it's definitely important to get that test run and make sure your audio sounds good.
I want you, Kara and Andrew, as my witness. You heard Chandra say that this is not a professional show, so I'm kidding, Chandra. She knows I'm kidding. I hope. Chandra, you know I'm kidding. But Kara, Andrew, any thoughts on audio for kind of the importance?
Yeah, I would just add that I think it's so trendy, especially in the last few years, to lay down what they call a sick beat or a background track. But too often I hear that take over the voiceover or take over the audio to where you really struggle to hear. So if you are using music, I mean, I don't think you should be blending those two all the time. Maybe there's a time or place or emphasis point of that, but I'd love to hear what you all think on that too. But I just hear way too much of this music playing all the time, and I can't get hear the person. And it's like, what's the point?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a great one, Kara. I think it goes back to kind of the barriers that I was talking about too, and music can often be that like barrier to the learning process when it's just so loud and you're like trying to understand, it's competing with the voiceover. I definitely agree. A couple other things with audio I would add. I think it's, you know, it's one of those things that seems to always be an afterthought when you're creating videos, or at least if you haven't created too many videos previously, it's sort of like, oh, audio, it's just the audio part. But I actually think it's probably as important or more important than the actual visuals that are coming on screen. So I've always been one that pays very close attention to the audio recording, try to always, if possible, use some type of external microphone recording device if you have that option. And there are a couple other things that you can do if you're the actual one recording the voiceover to make it a little bit more engaging. Some things like, and this is not like based on any research like that you guys have done, Matt, but just with my own like anecdotal experience, just standing up when recording, for some reason it adds a little bit of energy to your tone and to the voiceover. And then also like smiling, just like being trying to just like find a little bit of joy in what you're saying actually makes it come across a little bit more engaging and helps to communicate that information even more clearly, I found.
Yeah, standing up is a great tip. And it's, you know, it's interesting. I have my setup here, and I have a sit stand desk, so I can stand up, but I can't get my settings for on camera to look good because of where my lights and monitors are. But it is such an important thing that I often forget. Like I find myself, because I'll start slouching and closing off that diaphragm, that I gotta like, oh, I shift a lot in my seat during episodes because I'm like, okay, I gotta sit up, because you gotta open up your chest and diaphragm to be able to speak and breathe.
So right.
It's overlooked. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, if you think about singers, right? They're hardly ever like sitting down and singing, right? They're usually standing up for that same reason.
But they also get they can have the sick beats. So as Kara said.
They can't have the sick beats. Yeah, that's true. They need them.
So I guess let's ask this, because Kara said, like, no, you know, the music sometimes gets mixed. So what's your thoughts about music at the beginning and the end, top and tail, as we might say in the business? Is that okay? Or is that get annoying? Chandra, any thoughts there? Because I don't think you use any music in like the TechSmith tutorials, do you?
I do not. I feel similar to, you know, like we talked a little about this with webcams too. Maybe in the beginning and the end when you are trying to like build excitement, but when you are trying to draw the attention on the steps to follow, I feel like music, unless it's real quiet and blended really well, can be pretty distracting. So we like to use it in videos. I have used it in videos where it's like, get to know Snagit, and it's an exciting video that's supposed to, like, you know, let people see what Snagit can do, but it's not telling you step by step how to do the process. So that music fit in well in that scenario. But yeah, it can be, I don't want to add too many things to give them cognitive overload or anything with music and audio and visuals.
Yeah. So, Andrew, what about you? Is where you're working, do you use music at all? Or is it like, no, we're just going to go straight voiceover?
We do. We do use music. I used to be way more like pro sick beats, like in everything. And I've kind of shifted the other way a little bit. I still think that music is helpful on the engagement side. I think it sets a tone for the overall training. And I think that's important sometimes to build a little bit of like initial excitement and engagement from the very beginning, so that you can keep people interested in the content. What we've been doing recently is starting with that intro and then just fading all the way down to like very like 3% or 4% in Camtasia, right? Like really just kind of like underlying, can't even really hear it. And then at the outro, ramping back up. So I found that that's kind of a good way that, like, if there is a long pause and no voiceover, there's still something just like kind of happening in the background to keep people around, but it's not overly distracting from the actual goal of the video.
Now I have to ask this question, Andrew, because, I'm really curious. Do you use the same music track across the series or across many of your videos, or are you always mixing it up?
I use the same one across like a series. If I'm making like a 10 video course or something like that, I'll use the same track to kind of create that consistency across that course.
Okay, so I'll share my experience here. So long time ago, TechSmith launched our product Screencast.com, and I was making these 1 minute videos, right? So super short, like easy to watch, easy to digest. And they were coming out like about once a week. And these were kind of helpful tips about making screencasts. And I used music at the beginning, right? And it was the same track. Because I was like, oh, it's a series. Like, people will understand. Like, this is the 1 minute video series. I can't tell you. I got a lot of complaints. Because can you please change the music? Because people were, I thought they were watching them once a week. They were watching them like 10 in a row.
Oh, all together.
It's like, yeah. So I ruined, in that case, I ruined videos. But it was also because they were super digestible, right? It was like, you were going to like 3 minutes and you watched three of them. So,
yeah.
So, but it's interesting. But I love the idea of having something to tie together. Like, hey, yeah, these go together. This is a similar product or similar motion.
Well, music's tough too, because it's very personal there's four of us on this call and we probably each have very different musical preferences of what I think is a good song and what you think is a good song. So it's kind of hard sometimes to like figure out what's going to be general enough that everyone's going to enjoy this and people aren't going to complain. Because I've also received complaints too, like, what is this music going on here? You know,
maybe.
You know, speaking of,
No, go ahead, Kara. Go.
I was just going to say, speaking of that, I actually had a client not too long ago in their branding guidelines have suggested background music tracks. And that was one of the first branding guidelines that I've seen that included that. So I thought that was something kind of interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah, never would have thought of that. Well, let's move on to another question. And all right, so Kendra, you actually brought up this idea of picture in picture. I'm curious about using picture in picture in your productions. Having especially screen content or other content where there's something going on, and then your speaker, is that good for a video, or is that is there best practices, or is that just kind of ruin it for you? When you see one, do you just cringe? So whoever wants to start off with that.
So I can share my opinion. And so for me, I have found, especially I'd say more in webinars, but I think it can apply to tutorials as well. When I do turn my webcam on in the intro, I feel like people connect with me a little bit better and I get better feedback from viewers. So I do think it is a nice element to add. Especially hey, today we're going to learn, X, Y, and Z. And then personally, though, I would minimize or eliminate it when I'm getting to a point where I want them to focus on how to do something, like I'm showing them a how-to on the screen. And maybe I'd come back and appear towards the end in a conclusion. But that's my opinion. I just feel like if it's on there the whole time, it could potentially distract them or maybe even hide what you're trying to show them.
Yeah, absolutely. Kara, any strong feelings about this? You're making a lot of videos for people, right?
I am, yeah. I'm really on the fence about it. I think it kind of that last question about the music, I think it really can kind of depend on either the culture of the organization, who it's going to be. Is it totally inward facing? Is it an outward facing resource, right? Is it publicly facing for potential clients? So I actually totally agree Chandra's approach. I think that's a great one to do, where you maybe welcome people, get that connection going, and then minimize and have them focus on the content in the video. So Chandra's spot on.
Yeah.
I did have one thing that came to mind that we do consider as well with picture-in-picture and tutorials, and that's localization. So if you're creating a video and you want to then translate it into a lot of different languages, that can be tricky when you have a face video and you can't just replace the audio track type of fixes.
Chandra, you don't speak German and French and Spanish and Italian and all the languages?
Not as of now. It'd be amazing, but no.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Andrew, you actually started off earlier on talking about that connection. So for you, what about what are your thoughts? Should it be picture in picture, or do you have another approach?
I think it's, yeah, I mean, I'm sort of Kara, where I think this could go either way. It all depends on kind of the context and the goals that you're going for with what you're creating. But generally, I do stick with that sense of that we're all conditioned in our education system growing up to learn from another human instructor, a person standing up here and talking. So I think that it does help with adding that element, similar to what you said, Chandra, from starting from the beginning when you're on screen and you're sharing something. There's that human connection element that I think is very important. So I think if you have the resources and the capability and it matches with the goals of the video, I think it's very helpful.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, one or two more questions and then we'll go to our speed round. So this might be harder because, we've all been making we make a lot of videos between us. It would be interesting to know the kind of the video count, but I know I still make mistakes. So what are some of the mistakes that you still tend to make that you think, oh gosh, that just would have been a fantastic, awesome video. And it's maybe not as good as it could have been because of kind of this, the thing that you keep maybe getting I don't want to say wrong, but just it's oh, it could be so much better. So what are the things that you're still working on?
I'll tell on myself. I think my two biggest Achilles heels are frame rate and canvas size. So I will bring in different assets and try to mix them, or maybe I record it, which I'm really bad about, recording on one computer, recording on another. I know I need to be more homogeneous there, but that's just the way my brain works. Just roll with it. And then when I'm trying to piecemeal it all together, I'm oh my gosh, this is such a mess. So I often find myself trying to fix things in the back end, or I'll publish it and just be thinking, oh gosh, I hope this looks good. But then I'll look at it and I see all these things wrong with it. And then I just go back tweaking. So those are two of my personal problems that I put things together that I still struggle with sometimes. And I just need to slow down. Really, that's my advice to myself. Slow down. Take your time when you're going through this. But I can tell myself that, but then that's a good.
Great advice. I love that. And especially when you do have multiple types of things bringing together, it's tough to make it look good, right? It's easier when it is uniform. So love that. Who's next?
I could jump in. I think I tend to be sort of overly formal with video editing, and it ends up taking longer than it should. Right. So I think there's this, and I want to be careful though, because I think there is a lot of detail orientation that's required in video editing, and you need to kind of be deep in it to produce something that's valuable. But there becomes a point where it's like, now you're just wasting your own time picking at these little tiny details in it when you could have got this out 2 weeks ago. Right. So I think that that's something that I'm trying to figure out, is how do I just kind of push this forward. Let's get this out. It doesn't have to be exactly perfect. No one's going to notice that tiny little thing, the way the transition happened in the top right corner. No one cares about that. So I'm trying to just do that and push myself to just get things out a little bit faster.
Well, Andrew, you don't know this because we just met, but Chandra's husband is a video producer and video team manager at TechSmith. And I work with him very closely. And he will tell you, and I will tell you, that, you know, for any video person out there, like, that does video professionally, a video project is never done. It is never finished. You just have to put, like, okay, we just have to have an end state where we say, this is where we stop, because there's always something to tweak. But such great advice, and something that, like, I find myself, yeah, there's a lot of great detail work that needs to be done, but it can also be problematic because you can get caught in the loop of like, oh, it's not perfect. And well, it will never be perfect, nor will ever truly be done. So great. I love it. All right, Chandra, what's the mistake you're making?
Well, I can totally relate to what Andrew was talking about as well. How many times have we labeled our MP4 final, and then there's final two and final three? But yeah, I would say my error mistake, I'm still working on two pieces. One is assumed knowledge, and pacing is my second. So they kind of go together. So you have some feedback on some hand, like, it was too slow for me as a viewer. You know, viewers feel like it's too slow, or some people say, oh, it's too fast, I couldn't follow along. So it's trying to find that sweet spot of making sure you include enough information so that they know how to do the process or successfully, but not go through it too quickly and not assume they already know pieces of it. So especially as the curse of knowledge continues to build in the years that you have experience. And sometimes it's hard. I talk about putting on my beginner goggles, you know, am I watching this with those goggles or not, to make sure that, yeah, anyone who's new to using the product can follow along.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, I think, for anyone making software about their own, or tutorials about their own software or tools that they know very well, it's hard to also know, like, who are those people? Like, what is it that they don't know and what they do know? So love it. Love it. Well, here's what I think we're going to do. I think these have been wonderful answers. You guys are all fantastic. We're gonna wrap up the show with our speed round. So for those who don't know, our speed round is meant to be quick, short answers to quick questions. We actually have a special way to come up with those questions. We roll a die. So let's go ahead and jump in to our speed round. All right. So I have three 12-sided die. One die for each of you. I've got a green, a blue, and a pink. So Kara, which color do you want? Because you get to go first. You want the blue. And I'll note, it's got gold flecks in it just for you. So, okay, let's go over here to our dice cam. Let's give it a little bit more light so you can see a little bit better. Here we go. So this is the first question. Okay, so you are a 7. I'm going to set that aside. Chandra, do you want a pink or a green?
Go green.
All right, green and white, Michigan State Spartans for Chandra. Oh, rolled off.
That's right.
Well, it's gone. It rolled off. I think I can see it. It's a one. So we're gonna go with one.
Okay.
It's under my desk someplace. And then, Andrew, you get the last one here. And you get a six. So we got 7, 1, and 6. So we'll just come back over here. So, Kara, you were number 7. So you've done a lot in the learning and development field, right? You've been in higher ed. You've worked in large corporations, managing teams. Now you're doing the solo thing, which is awesome. So if you had to shift careers out of the world of the learning and development, what would you do?
Oh, a professional video game streamer, for sure. Like, I would love to make money playing video games every day. Although I think at that point, I probably wouldn't find them as fun. But if that didn't work out for me, I'd love to be a veterinarian because I love games. So here you go.
Look at that. You got plans. Good luck with the video game streaming. We'll just say that, you know, we do know video games played at the same time as the live stream does affect the bandwidth. So
that's true.
Gotta boost your bandwidth to be able to do both. So, all right, Chandra, your speedrun question is, where do you turn for inspiration?
Sure. I honestly look all over the place. Like, I caught myself the other day watching an intro to a commercial and paying attention to the animation and figuring out, ooh, I could maybe apply that to the intro of my next video. I like a website called Information is Beautiful that does a lot of infographic design, but I could take some of those graphic elements. Other company tutorials, you know, I've seen some of theirs, like, to be honest, like something like Home Depot, where I'm trying to build something on the weekend and they have a video and then maybe 10 steps underneath that I can see the breakdown and be like, oh, I really like that tutorial. And I might bookmark it and use it for inspiration later on.
I love that. Yeah. Go to the places that have beautiful things, that have things that you can maybe not directly related, but relate for sure. All right. Well, Andrew, you have number 6 here. If you could be a hero in any story, who would you choose and why?
That's a tough one. I'm sort of this, like, this weird type of person that I don't like watch a lot of movies or like TV shows. So I would probably go with the cliche answer of just like, I'm just trying to create my own story here, trying to figure it out as we go, to be honest with you.
I love it. I mean, that's okay. You can be the hero in your own story. That's yeah. Fantastic. The right answer was probably Luke Skywalker, but you know, whatever. I'm kidding. Well, okay. You've all been great. Before we go to our final take here, let's just say, so if someone's listening to this, they're like, oh man, that I really connected with that idea, that thought, where is the one best place they should reach out to you to connect with, you know, whether that's a social platform, email, whatever you want. Kara, where should people reach out to you?
LinkedIn, KaraNorth11.
Kara's got tons of great information. She's always posting and putting out great stuff. So go check her stuff out. What about you, Andrew?
Yeah, same. LinkedIn's great. Send me a message or just connect. That's probably the best spot.
Awesome. Chandra, what about you?
Same as Kara and Andrew. LinkedIn is just Chandra Owen. Yep. Send me a message if you want to say hi.
And no, LinkedIn is not a sponsor of this, but
<That's right.
laughs> we appreciate all of you. So let's do this. We're going to do our final take. So kind of your wrap up summary. Why don't we start with you, Andrew, and then we'll go Chandra and then Kara. So Andrew, what's your final take?
Yeah, a final take for creating good videos. I'd say really focus on the pre-work. Think about what goal that you're trying to achieve, what the learning objective is for your audience, and really hone in and get that right. And then write the content in a way that's a little bit more informal and that comes across as a natural human to human interaction. If you focus on those two things from the very beginning, the rest of your video and the way that it'll come together will be much more smooth.
Fantastic. Thank you, Andrew. Chandra, what's your final take?
Yeah, mine is similar. It's taking time for the prep. So like we talked about with thinking about your visuals, what example are you going to show? Is it going to be distracting or does it go along with the step-by-step that you're trying to show? Make a quick walkthrough, type it out step-by-step, like what steps do I need to show them to complete this task? I like to do that in maybe like a Google Doc on the side, and then I do a walkthrough and I tell you 10 times out of 10, I notice a step that I missed. And it saves me time when I go to do the actual recording. So doing that prep definitely can save you time and improve the quality of your tutorial.
Awesome. Very great, great tips. All right, Kara, what's your final take?
My final take is get feedback from people, right? So just don't put it out there and hope that it's wonderful. See if there's ways that you can maybe test it with maybe a core group of people in your organization, or maybe have your team look at it. But don't just send it out to send it out. Get additional perspectives. Even better, if it's something that maybe some content somebody's not that familiar with can they logically follow it. But I think all of that, if you follow Andrew and Chandra's tips, the evaluation piece and getting feedback, that's the missing piece.
All right. Well, thank you all once again for being here and having this conversation. Hopefully we haven't done anything to ruin a good video, but we appreciate all you. Kara Noor, thank you. Chandra Owen and Andrew DeBell, you guys are all rock stars, and we're so honored and privileged to have you here on the Visual Lounge.
Thanks. This was a great time. Yeah, great to meet you all, and really, really enjoyed it.
Right. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us here in this episode of the Visual Lounge. Hopefully you've picked up some ideas of how not to ruin your videos and got some ideas how to make them a little bit better. So go follow Kara and Chandra and Andrew. All great advice, and there's always more you can learn from them by following them on LinkedIn. But like we like to do at the end of every show, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, we hope you take a little bit of time to level up every single day. Thanks, everybody.